From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 23rd day of February 2017. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Happy birthday to my brother Larry. This morning, the United States Department of Agriculture put out 10-year projections, including acreage figures for this year. Again, those numbers will be updated March the 31st. But as of this morning, USDA says farmers in this nation will plant 88 million acres of soybeans. That's up 5.5% from last year. And 90 million acres of corn, down 4.3%. We'll take up those numbers and trade reaction with Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, and Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. And as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast too, some expectations for the growing season from Mike Tenorum at T-Storm Weather in Chicago on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon, the 23rd day of February. We're now joined by Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
How you doing, Todd?
I'm doing very well. USDA was busy this morning, as most of us expected. They were releasing their Ag Outlook numbers. They put soybean acres at 88 million and corn acres at 90 million. What do you think of those numbers, and how'd the trade react?
Well, those numbers have been kind of bounced around depending upon who you talk to. So they were kind of inside the trade chatter range, so to speak. But I think the way I kind of understand the way the trade was interpreting it this morning, that maybe the bean yields or the bean acres was a little higher than maybe what they were looking for. But I really think that was a poor excuse. I mean, I think for the most part, what the numbers do is just remind the trade that if we have favorable growing conditions and trend line yields, that we're not going to do anything as far as basically reducing carryouts. Carryout numbers are going to hold steady, maybe decline slightly depending upon what the yield. If we have another bin buster like we did last year, well, then we could probably go up some. But I think anytime you have the main focus of the news is based upon supply demand tables. And that's what we're hearing this week out of the USDA forum today and tomorrow. That's going to be generally bearish. Then we begin to hear wire services stories of crop estimates coming out of South America, and they seem to be coming in a little higher than maybe what USDA has got plugged in on their current balance sheets. So then there's people thinking that, you know, when USDA gets around to their March supply demand tables, that we might see some bigger world numbers, and then bigger world numbers mean, you know, larger world inventory. So we're just, I think, in a period right in here where, you know, like I said, when the trade focuses on supply demand tables, it's going to be a bearish day. Technically, I think this is somewhat should be expected. The market does have a tendency to break as you go into the last few days of the month, and the dominant trend of the month was higher. So we started breaking last week, and then that kind of accelerated itself here this week. I think by the time early next week comes around, or by the time first notice day comes around on Tuesday, this current break should be complete, and then the market should probably try to stabilize, and then I think the market would be in position to maybe try to give us some kind of rally as we go in toward middle March. This is, I think, end of month break. Wire service news is generally bearish, oversupply. So I think that kind of sums up the day.
Right. So if you look at it for summing the day up, and then you take it into a much broader picture and talk about some of the global supplies. I made note that USDA suggested by their stats that the soybean to corn ratio for the months of February was the highest since 1997. And if you go back and look on the global supplies, 1996 was a really short year for soybeans. So we turned that around fairly quickly in 97. But I suspect that's why 97 was that way. And I think they also talked about 2014, if I remember correctly. It's been, you know, a few hours since then, where we had an 8% increase in soybean acreage. So are you of a mind that really acreage can follow suit somewhere in here and get more, a bit higher than 88 million in the United States?
Well, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, current cash prices for new crop corn is not very attractive. I know that the insurance average is not going to be too bad. But I think what we're – so beans, when you look at it on the surface at current day, beans is likely to be the more profitable of the two. And, of course, that all depends upon your land and where you're at in the corn belt and whatnot. So the corn-soybean ratio should push a lot of acres of ground into soybeans. And it's not only coming at the expense of corn, it's coming at the expense of wheat. And see, wheat is one of these commodities now that we've got such a large supply that the overall cash price doesn't vary much. And we have generally wide basis levels. So there's not any opportunities for producers to make any kind of revenue payment from crop insurance. So wheat now is, you know, I think the crop insurance program has fried the wheat market. So now there's only two crops now that still offer farmers, depending upon which part of the country you're in, there's a potential of maybe some revenue gain from crop insurance policies. But I think that's probably, if we have a good crop this year, then all three commodities will be back in the same. Wheat let it down. Corn's kind of close to it. Beans are the one that's still the most profitable. And if we plant as many beans as what the market is thinking, and we have favorable weather, then all three crops will be down in the sewer. We'll have extremely wide basis levels, and probably any kind of revenue income from crop insurance policies would probably be a nil to nothing. So that is one of the flaws in the crop insurance program is it's already killed the wheat market. It's done a pretty good job of killing corn, and the next one to kill will be soybeans. So I think that's, you know, a year from now, we'll have to see where everything's at. But it's all about weather from this point forward. It's really always about weather. And, it's been 5 years since we had major weather problems here in North America. So we are due to have weather adversities. Whether or not that materializes or not, I don't know. But at least if you assume a normal weather, and this is the time of year everybody assumes normal weather, and then if you go into the growing season and you begin to get some weather adversities, then the market then begins to price in a weather premium into those commodity prices. So I think that's kind of where we're at. The other thing is there is an element of inflation in the air. You could see that with gold prices today up about $17. Anytime you get gold prices rallying sharply, it's very difficult to see ag commodities do anything but go down. There's a pretty good correlation there. Now, ag prices will start rising once the gold rally is complete. But if the gold rally is going to strengthen in here, it's going to be price depressant, I think, on commodities. And of course, everybody's focused on the big gains that we saw in the stock market. And, you know, technically, you can read some pretty big numbers into the stock market. If that materializes, we'll have to kind of wait and see. But there's not going to be much speculative interest in wanting to own ag commodities, at least at this point in time, given the supply-demand balance sheets that we're looking at.
One other number to take up and to be short with from this morning's Agricultural Outlook Forum in D.C., cotton acreage up 14.2%. Now, they only plant 11.5 million acres, or that's the expectation of it. Anything to think about that as it relates to soybean or corn acres?
Well, it just basically says that the cotton has priced its way back into the marketplace as being a little more profitable than the other commodities. I haven't looked exactly where that increase in cotton acres is coming from. I know we naturally think right away cotton acres, we think of the Delta, but there's a lot of acres grown in California and a lot of acres grown in Texas. The Delta is really not that big a deal anymore, but I'd have to look at where those numbers are at. But it's obviously, if you're going to see an increase in cotton acres, that many farmers are beginning to see that as more profitable alternative than some of the other commodities that they were looking at.
Hey, thanks so much, and we'll see you, in about 10 or 12 days, something like that. Looking forward to having you over at the Beef House.
Yeah, a week from Tuesday, I guess.
That's right. Okay, thanks so much. That, of course, is Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. In today's agricultural news, USDA's Agricultural Outlook Forum put forward some 10-year projections. They included price and acreage numbers for the 2017-18 season. It now projects that the average season cash price for wheat across the United States will be $4.30, corn $3.50, and soybeans $9.60. It put total crop acreage this year at 249.8 million acres, down 1.4% last year. 90 million acres are expected to go into corn. That's 4.3% lower than last year. 5.5% more soybean acres at 88 million, and wheat down 8.3% at 46 million. On the subject of soybeans, over the next 10 years, USDA expects global soybean trade to increase by 25%, and that Chinese purchases will account for 85% of the increase. U.S. Chief Economist Rob Johansson says the projections are based on the assumption the number of middle-class households in China will double to nearly 250 million people by the year 2024.
Those households will start demanding more meat protein and processed foods in their diet. And looking at other potential markets that could provide significant new demands for food commodities, we note that the number of middle-class households in India is expected to more than triple by 2024.
Johansson says the United States has not had nearly as much success in opening new markets in India as it has in China. He thinks poultry, eggs, fruit, and milk have the greatest potential. The estimated annual growth in poultry meat, for example, he explains, could exceed 8%. The livestock trade across the planet, says the chief economist, will require grain and oilseed farmers to expand acreage.
Based on projected yield growth, the world will need to allocate about 50 million more acres to corn, wheat, and soybeans at U.S. productivity growth levels to meet the increase in trade demand.
The United States, says Johansson, is expected to remain the world's largest exporter of corn over the next 10 years, with U.S. share between 38 and 39%. Brazil is expected to remain the world's largest soybean exporter, with its share of exports growing to over 50% by the year 2026. Well, let's stay in Washington, D.C., where Donald Trump is being praised for his support of ethanol, stressing the need for certainty around the administration's support for the renewable fuels industry. National Farmers Union recognizes the Trump administration's growing positive record in support of renewable fuels as a means to spur economic growth, provide good-paying jobs, and benefit American family farmers, ranchers, and rural economies. NFU President Roger Johnson urges the Trump administration to continue its previously stated support for the renewable fuel standard and says he looks forward to working with the administration to ensure the success of the renewable fuels industry. On that note, farm groups are asking the president for some infrastructure help. More than 200 groups involved in agriculture or in rural areas of the country, including the American Farm Bureau Federation, Farm Credit Council, American Soybean Association, and the Corn Refiners Association, are asking President Trump to ensure rural needs are included in any infrastructure proposal under his administration. They say past infrastructure initiatives often focused on urban and suburban infrastructure while not adequately addressing the unique needs of rural communities. They go on to say American agriculture truly feeds the world and creates millions of jobs for U.S. workers. Our nation's ability to produce food and fiber and transport it efficiently across the globe is a critical factor in U.S. competitiveness internationally. Infrastructure that supports rural communities and links them to global markets has helped make the U.S. the unquestioned leader, they say, in agricultural production. And then go on to say that the deteriorating infrastructure threatens that leadership position. The groups go on to caution that the federal government cannot solve the problem alone and should partner with local governments and private funding sources. And finally today, you know, the warm weather here in the Midwest has farmers itching to go to the field to get some preseason work done. University of Illinois Extension agronomist Emerson Nafziger says it's okay to apply anhydrous ammonia on corn acres.
It is okay to do it. I would liken it more to a fall application right now than to a spring one, probably. The good news is the soil conditions are pretty good right now. We haven't had rain, very much rain at all in February. That's the most important thing.
Again, Nafziger says as long as soil conditions are good, a late winter anhydrous ammonia application should work just like a fall application. That's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon, and we're joined now by Mike Tenora. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Mike, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome, Todd. Great to be here.
Let's start with U.S. weather. It's been warm. Some producers have been in the field and maybe applying a little anhydrous ammonia. But is there any correlation that you can see between a February like this and what we might encounter later in the season?
The short answer is no. If you look at some of the warmest January-February periods on record, of which this January and February across the Corn Belt will rank among the mildest, if you look at what happened in the summers that followed, there's not a whole lot there. Total rainfall and temperatures varied widely, with some dry summers, some hot summers, some wet summers, and some cool summers. And once you dig down a little bit deeper, and just isolate out the corn and soybean crops that occurred within those summers, you just don't see a whole lot there. You see some really good crop years, you see some really bad crop years, but in the end, you just can't draw a real strong correlation. The only real difference for corn and soybeans that we noticed is that soybeans tended to be a bit below trend more often than corn. That was primarily due to what happened in 1976 and 1984, where late season droughts occurred, that affected soybean filling more than corn filling. But again, the point to take home here is that even though it's unusually mild now, it does not portend much of anything for the summer based on the historical record.
Turn your attention to South America. I hear that we've had some rainfall or are going to get some in Brazil.
It's been wet in Brazil ever since the middle of January. Starting within January 12th to 15th in northern growing areas of Brazil, it turned a lot wetter. And prior to this period, there have been some dry pockets that were developing. Well, all of those dry pockets are now gone, and it's been raining on and off ever since. We saw some real big rains a few days ago, and all indications suggest to us that this stormy pattern is going to continue. Now, rains over the next 4 to 5 days won't be as abundant as they were earlier in the week and in the weekend. But beyond the next 5 days, it does turn wetter. We'll see a number of cool fronts sweep onto the north. Those will then dissipate across northern areas of Brazil. And by the time we get through the next 2 weeks, another 3 to 6 inches of rain will more than likely have fallen. And that includes some of these areas of Mato Grosso that have seen more than 20 inches of rain over the last 30 days. So whether or not this turns into a larger issue remains to be seen. Keep in mind that soybeans are being harvested now in Mato Grosso, and second crop corn is being planted. It's been wet. It stays wet. What happens going forward? We'll just have to wait and hear some reports to see if this ended up meaning anything.
Hey, as always, great information. Thanks so much. And we'll look forward to hearing from you again next week with an update on both the southern and the northern hemisphere crops. Thanks so much.
You're welcome, Todd. Have a great day. Always a pleasure being here.
Mike Tenora is with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Thursday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.